This is CICK News. In Northern BC, finding childcare can shape everything, from whether parents return to work or whether families can afford to work at all. For one local provider, that reality became impossible to ignore. After struggling to secure care for her own child, town councillor Genevieve Patterson opened a small home-based center driven by what she describes as fear, not opportunity. Across BC, the province's promise of a $10 a day childcare was meant to ease that pressure. But advocates with the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC say the system is showing cracks, especially in rural and northern communities. In the north, the childcare system isn't just strained, it's operating without a clear picture of the workforce needed to even sustain it. I sat down with Genevieve at her home to hear what her experience has been looking for childcare since the birth of her son, Casey.
My name is Genevieve Patterson, and I'm a counselor with the Town of Smithers and a small business owner.
Can you tell me what brought you to the decision to actually open up your own childcare facility?
When you have a baby, everybody says, oh, it's the most exciting time in your life. I would say I cried a lot during that time, and not just from the surge of hormones, but this fear of not knowing, how are we going to be able to afford to live, to pay the rent, to feed our children? Like, these are the same conversations I was having with other families. If we can't go back to work, it was scary. I honestly cannot even describe the fear. And I didn't want to sit and wait for someone to come in and save me. Talking to childcare providers who, bless them, are managing 3 to 5 year wait lists. Yeah. Now, as a new provider, recognizing the volume of work that goes into that is extraordinary. And that fear, I think, just drove me to say, okay, there's always a solution. How am I going to make this work? So I just met with other providers in this community who've done it before me, met with Northern Health, met with our local child development center. It was really a community-led initiative, I would say. And just blessed enough to say that the home that we do have was large enough that we could put in 6 months of sleepless nights actually renovating the space, working on my policies and procedures. Like, that sort of fear just drove me to say, I don't really have a choice. Yeah.
The fear that Genevieve mentions is increasingly common in northern communities where childcare shortages and long wait lists collide with rising costs of living. Operators are expected to maintain high standards of care while navigating a complex web of funding programs, reporting requirements, and staffing challenges. Patterson hasn't yet applied for provincial funding, but says that the system itself is already a deterrent. Affordability benchmarks are the backbone of how childcare fees are set in BC, but they're not based on what it actually costs to run a childcare center. Instead, they're based on what most providers are already charging in a region. The province sets a maximum fee, called a benchmark, and if providers charge above that, they can't access government funding to reduce parent fees. That funding, through the CCFRI, or Child Care Fee Reduction Initiative, is what brings costs down for families, sometimes by hundreds of dollars a month. But to qualify, providers have to keep their fees at or below the benchmark and meet a range of administrative requirements. The catch? In regions where fees have historically been lower, like northern communities, the benchmarks are also lower. So providers say that that can leave them trying to deliver quality care at rates that really don't reflect higher operating costs, staffing shortages, or inflation. So while the system is designed to make childcare more affordable for families, some say it doesn't always work for the people providing it.
You have these affordability benchmarks that you charge families in order to be able to cover your operating costs and provide quality childcare. Then you apply to the provincial government to receive various levels of funding, ECE wage enhancement, or operating costs. It's a sort of like an administrative transactional approach that happens between the province and you as a provider to be able to offer subsidized or affordable childcare to families.
So as you mentioned, if you apply, what does that look like for providers who want to apply because they want to offer affordable childcare? What's that wait list and the process?
So there's actually several funding programs that are available to providers, which I think is great. But a lot of the feedback that I've heard from people who I've asked for feedback as I launch into this initiative, they talk about that administrative burden doesn't cover their cost and their time. A lot of these people are also busy outside of owning small businesses. They have families. So for them, when you stack up the rising cost of building requirements, operating requirements, competitive pay for their teachers who also need more professional development, all of those things combined, it starts to become not worth it for them to invest all of their time and energy into doing that. Mm-hmm. And it also takes away from their ability to provide quality care to the children because they're so head down then focused on this management of administrivia of all these various funding programs.
That administrative load combined with strict program criteria has led some experienced providers to just opt out entirely. Organizations like the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC have long argued that while affordability for families is critical, the system must also be sustainable for operators.
I'm Sharon Gregson. I'm the provincial spokesperson for the $10 a day childcare campaign, and I work with the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC. The Coalition of Childcare Advocates has been around for more than 40 years, and our role is to do the research and collect stories and to advocate for a universal childcare system that is high quality for children, that meets the diverse needs of children and their families, and also values and advocates for fair compensation for early childhood educators. So we look at childcare as being for the public good, as an important economic pillar, and also as a public good for society, just like our public education system.
The most recent 2026 provincial budget showed a $330 million addition over the next 3 years for the $10 a day childcare program. Some providers have responded saying that a rapid rollout of this affordability program has created administrative strain and uncertainty for their locations. So has the pace of change risked destabilizing parts of the sector, do you think?
Unfortunately, government got off track on implementing a quality $10 a day childcare system. So they created inequities by only having 10% of childcare be operating as a 10 a day site. And they started to underfund those sites because they weren't investing appropriately in early childhood educators. So not enough money for decent wages for early childhood educators. And they weren't expanding quickly enough. So still long waiting lists. And an administrative overburden for operators. We are all about accountability back to taxpayers. We want to make sure that public dollars are used wisely. But there are so many different funding streams that it's a definite administrative overburden for operators.
With this budget, Sharon, was the coalition able to provide any guidance on that decision about childcare for the 2026 budget? Or how involved or how much say do you feel like the coalition was able to have in order to represent ECEs and providers?
Oh, we try all the time to have influence. So just after Christmas this year, we had an open letter published in the Globe and Mail, signed by 23 influential women, sending a signal to Premier Eby that government had gotten off track on its with its childcare plans.
And you also advocate for a more publicly funded system, but many childcare spaces are privately operated. So what role do you see for private providers, and do you think that there's a risk that they would be pushed out?
In the province right now, there's about 170,000 licensed childcare spaces, and all but about 5,000 of them take public money for operating. So what you're talking about is the childcare programs that are privately owned, but they're still publicly funded. Almost all those programs, about 170,000, they all are using public dollars to support their operating, to support lowering parent fees, and to support paying their early childhood educators. So there's already significant public funding that goes into the sector, about $2 billion a year now.
So the province uses standardized funding benchmarks to ensure fairness across regions for providers and families. So for northern operators, how do you address concerns when you hear from them about inequity or setting precedents for other regions?
There are inequities right across the province, unfortunately. And every region has some specific challenges. But you're right that in the north, only 1 in 6 childcare spaces are operating as 10 a day. and that's in the when we look across the North generally. And if we look, for example, in the Fraser Valley, in that health region, only 1 in 31 spaces are operating as 10 a day. So there's inequities all across the province. And there are additional challenges in the north that we hear about, particularly around transportation, around heating costs, around being able to attract qualified ECEs into mm-hmm. programs, being able to expand, particularly for infant, toddler, and school-age childcare. There aren't any regions that have sufficient numbers of qualified educators.
The coalition relies primarily on publicly available data, including a Ministry of Education and Childcare website that tracks the numbers of licensed spaces, funded spaces, $10 a day operating sites, and early childhood educators receiving the wage top-up, broken down by health region.
In the northern region, there are 641 educators receiving the wage enhancement right now, compared to, for example, on Vancouver Island, see how many here, 2,400.
And is that the, and I'm sorry, because I'm just trying to remember everything that I read, but is it an extra $2.15 per hour? Is that what the wage does?
$6 an hour.
Do you think that the wage increase is enough to address and retain workers?
Oh, absolutely not. No. In its agreement with the federal government, because of course, childcare, the BC government committed in 2017 to develop a $10 a day childcare system. And then in 2021, the federal government also decided to support 10 a day childcare across the country. So now the federal and provincial governments each spend about $1 billion a year in BC childcare. And in one of the agreements that the BC government signed with the federal government, they committed to develop and implement a wage grid for early childhood educators. And our latest research shows that wage grid for post-secondary educated early childhood educators should be between $35 and $45 an hour. And yet the median wage for ECEs in the province is only $30 an hour, which means, of course, that half the ECEs in the province are earning less than $30 an hour, which is why we still have a recruitment and retention issue. And government's own reports show that that continues to be true. Very few ECEs have got a pension plan. Many don't have full health and welfare dental benefits. So there's lots more to do to strengthen the early childhood education profession.
And if you could change something immediately, what would you change about this program?
So government needs to invite all existing childcare programs to be part of the 10-a-day system so that all families have got affordable fees. And they need to make sure that they're funding programs to ensure that operators can provide quality for children and fair wages for ECEs through the wage grid. And they need to expand to create more spaces working with school districts and municipalities. I do hear people say that, you know, that it's too much to expect that all families should have access to childcare. But we give the example of all families in British Columbia have access to elementary schools. And so we think that this is the kind of model that we need to build on when we think about the rights of children to have access to quality services. And we know that childcare is a significant economic driver for the province. In 2024, the province spent $866 million on childcare, but the government reaped $1 billion in direct government revenues from more women working when they could access childcare. So we know that we want to invest in childcare because it's the right thing to do for children and families, but we also know it's the right thing to do for the economy.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
I'm really pleased. I appreciate you paying attention to this important issue.
As Sharon said, she understands that the government has a lot of work to do, but families across BC are counting on them to get it right. The $10 a day childcare program is in the right direction, and Sharon says that the coalition will keep holding government accountable to make sure that it delivers for children, families, and the early childhood educators who make it all possible.
My name is Shalana Schrader. I am an early childhood educator with a Strong Start program in Chetwynd, and I also work with the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC as a community outreach post. When I first started looking for childcare, my son was under the 30 months, and so I wasn't able to find any infant and toddler care. And so I had to put him into private in-home daycare. And we made too much, my family made too much to meet any of the fee reduction, but it was more than 10 a day. So I had to leave my part-time position, and I paid about $1,000 a month for that. When that program closed down, then I applied for 10 a day with the local Y in Chetwynd, and I was lucky to make it off the waiting list after a few months, and my son attended 10 a day, which was a game changer for our family. So, and then Strong Start, I have close to 60 children that are registered. It's a complete drop-in program and it's school-based. So I'm in an elementary school. And so parents come with their children, birth to 5 years. And what I hear from a lot of parents that come is that they are searching for childcare. And in Chetwynd, we have two centers that offer licensed care. And the one is 16 spaces, I believe, and the other one is 25 spaces. And that's for the 30 months to 5 year olds. Then there's one infant and toddler center, and I believe it is 12 spaces, but it might be 15. And that's all that we have in the entire community. So a lot of people are still seeking childcare. And so they'll use Strong Start as connections with other families so that they could do private, unlicensed childcare.
Shalana speaks positively about her own career change, highlighting the joy of working with children and connecting families to services. But she also flags that many ECEs in BC are earning just at or below a living wage, despite the demanding nature of the work. She argues that benefits and pensions are essential to attract and retain educators.
Being an ECE, it takes a large part of your life, and so it does need to be a career. It isn't just a job, right? You need to stay passionate and love what you do so that you can resist leaving the field, right? Staying with the children, staying with the families, and in your centers. When I landed in early childhood education over 12 years ago, I knew I was exactly where I needed to be.
Shalana highlighted that starting a childcare center is very expensive without government funding, which limits options in small and northern communities. Even with the existing fee reduction programs, the patchwork nature of this system doesn't fill all the gaps. Families who earn too much to qualify for subsidies still struggle with the high cost of living, that they are left bearing large out-of-pocket fees. And the stress of needing to find childcare when they are returning to work creates demand on parents to seek unlicensed caregivers whose fees are not readily shared with the government. Unsurprisingly, another one of the biggest challenges is geography. Funding models are based on regional affordability benchmarks, the amount that licensed providers can charge families. In northern communities, those benchmarks are often lower than in urban centers, despite higher operating costs. That gap makes it difficult to compete for workers, especially in regions where industries like natural resources offer higher wages and training incentives. The result is a growing workforce shortage. According to groups like the Early Childhood Educators of BC, or ECEBC, recruitment and retention are among the most pressing issues facing the sector.
What are some of these, like big picture sweeping northern specific issues that you're seeing that childcare providers are running into?
So obviously just the extensive wait list, recognizing especially for that infant toddler, we just have an overwhelming volume
And
of,
is that longer than 5 years?
for sure, living in a heavily natural resource driven sort of region and recognizing that they can't compete with the sectors who offer really great training incentives and really great high wages, where a lot of our young people are more interested in being able to pay the bills and getting their education paid for, which makes sense to me, good on them, instead of going to work in an industry where we know that, to me, I would just say it's not a livable wage when you look at the average across the province for ECEs, even with that $6 a day wage enhancement. And then, of course, the Northern Affordability Benchmark is so significantly lower than what in other regions across the province. How do you compete with that? How do you cover your operating costs, including paying, an ECE and making sure that they feel supported and they have, professional development and et cetera, et cetera? You can't compete with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did a comprehensive hiring across the entire province to try to get somebody, and I did find one person. Interestingly enough, I would say 90% of the applicants came from out of country, so people have identified who want to immigrate to Canada. There's this loophole where we don't have a lot of ECEs, but they're willing to, a lot of them, I would say just based on the countries that the applications flee, like war-torn countries, to come and work to support like early child education. But I was lucky enough to find one person, not through that hiring campaign, just locally through just bumping into them, who talked a lot about their interest in wanting to come back. But I would say I had to do a lot of incentivizing, and not based on what was asked of me from them, but just recognizing, okay, what do I make and what do I get in part of my job? What gives me that intrinsic value? It's professional development that's paid for. It's annual leave. Mm-hmm. It's a working wage that I can actually pay my bills. So I think that's how I was able to actually incentivize or land somebody. But I would say we have to be incredibly flexible and competitive. But if that doesn't cover the costs, like I don't know how anybody else is able to actually do it.
You said something earlier, which really stuck out to me, which is this comes down to the value of childcare.
100%. I see many people now doing what they need to do to survive, and you cannot blame them for it. But who suffers? It's the children. It's the families. So I think I would really want to see this provincial government step up and say, why are northern communities so disproportionately affected? Oh, the rate is in some cases $20 less that you can charge families as a provider, which essentially means the government pays you back as a childcare provider. But to me, it's just a no-brainer. So there are still a number of programs that are available to you as a provider to apply. Again, because I haven't done it yet, I'll be interested to report back on what I find, because even my initial lesson learned about this, even hiring an ECE to be able to focus on the children, and I do all of the administrivia on the back end, it's a full-time job. Yeah. So I just can't imagine that when I've done the math based on what I know those programs are going to essentially pay me in order to be able to offer affordable childcare, it's nowhere close to my time. Yep. I know you can't really put a dollar value on that time, but it takes away from spending time with my son in order to be able to give him quality childcare. So I can't imagine that anybody's going to want to come out of high school or university and be like, this is the life for me, because it is exhausting. But if they do, they're angels. Yeah.
Meanwhile, demand continues to outpace supply. Waitlists in communities like Smithers stretch on for years. That leaves families in limbo, unable to return to work or forced to piece together informal care. The province has recently paused expansion of the $10 a day childcare program to reassess its impact. For Patterson, that reassessment is an opportunity, but only if it leads to meaningful change.
Is, in your opinion, as a counselor, is the NCLGA the place to try to bring that conversation up?
It's really up to the provincial government, I think, to reassess those funding models and just say, we know that we're suffering here, i.e. the children are suffering, and they should be our first priority. We know that if we focus on things in a more proactive way, that's how we solve issues long term. So just look at that and just say, and especially this government now, both provincial and federal, saying they want to invest in the north and northern communities. I'm like, okay, let's do it. Show me what that looks like.
So then I guess sweeping and thinking about next steps, you've obviously mentioned this in council. What are you doing to advocate for raising these northern benchmarks? Who are you speaking to, and what sort of change are you trying to make happen?
That's a great question. So we have many opportunities to check in before we have to submit our resolutions to UBCM. So I'll be putting forward to council this recommendation of meeting with the ministry, because it's specifically up to the ministry to be able to do an assessment of those. I suspect as part of the $10 a day wage enhancement program, there's going to be considerations, or at least I would hope, to looking at the other funding programs. So I think it'll be quite timely. But it's just interesting that I've been to a number of these conferences where you look at the resolutions. I'm a bit surprised that I have not seen this come forward yet. So I'm really hoping that even if we start this process now, recognizing there's going to be elections in the fall, that this is something that continues to come forward until we start to see that change.
And yet, the system relies on that reality, on people willing to do this demanding, essential work, often at a personal cost. In northern communities, where options are fewer and pressures are higher, that imbalance is becoming harder to sustain. As governments revisit childcare policy, providers like Patterson are left asking the simple question: if affordable childcare is essential, who is making it possible and at what cost? I want to thank Counselor Genevieve Patterson, Shalana Schrader, and Sharon Gregson, all for taking the time to speak with me about this very important issue of childcare in the North. Stay tuned to CSUK News as I will be following up on this story as it expands.
This is not a business that you go into to make money. Well, you're putting the children first. And to me, that's incredible. Like, my hat's off to people who are doing this.
Yeah. Good luck with your business.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. Yeah. I'll take any advice anybody has. I'm like, oh my God.
CSUK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.